Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Toscano.
Europe must do the heavy lifting.
That message today from British Prime Minister Keir Starmer at a Ukraine security summit in London with European and other world leaders.
We've agreed that the UK, France and others will work with Ukraine on a plan to stop the fighting. Then we'll discuss that plan with the United States.
Former Trump National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster weighed in on the Oval Office argument between President Trump and Ukraine's President Zelensky with CBS's Scott Pelley for tonight's 60 Minutes.
Vladimir Putin couldn't be happier, Scott, because what he sees is all of the pressure on Zelensky, all of the pressure on Ukraine, and no pressure on him.
The allies look at the video and see what?
What they see is something that's just confounding, a discussion that doesn't reflect the reality of the war in Ukraine.
In Israel.
Thank you again, President Trump.
Prime Minister Netanyahu thanking the president for his support with weapons against Iran-supported militants. Meanwhile, Netanyahu is blocking aid from flowing into Gaza.
Israel has decided to stop letting goods and supplies into Gaza, something we've done for the past 42 days. We've done that because Hamas steals the supplies and prevents the people of Gaza from getting them.
The European Union has backed Netanyahu in condemning the refusal by Hamas to accept a ceasefire extension, while also saying Israel's decision to block Gaza aid risks, quote, humanitarian consequences. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is disputing President Trump's threatening to impose tariffs this week because he says fentanyl is coming across their border into the U.S.
Canada is not an issue in terms of source of illegal fentanyl into the United States.
A state of emergency and a burn ban are in effect in South Carolina after more than 100 wildfires sparked over the weekend. Evacuated residents in South and North Carolina have been allowed home. Steph and Jeff Sigori live near Myrtle Beach.
I've never seen anything like this, anywhere.
It's Oscar night. The curtain goes up in 2 hours for the 97th annual Academy Awards.
Following with 10 nominations each, Wicked and The Brutalist were both nominated for Best Picture, and Ariana Grande got her first nomination in a supporting role. Her co-star, Cynthia Erivo, made Oscar history by becoming the second black female performer ever nominated for Best Actress multiple times.
That's CBS News correspondent Vladimir Dutier reporting. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Central Wisconsin weather, I'm Corey Hartman. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows around 16. Chance of rain on Monday, mostly cloudy. 47 are high. Chance of rain Monday night with a low near 34. Rain is likely on Tuesday. Highs in the mid-40s. Rain and snow mix on Tuesday night.
Currently 33 degrees.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Director's Playhouse for this February 6, 2025, Session 58. Your host, Program Director here, James J. Maloff. I'm here with my partner in art, our head of production, Seth Habhager.
You got the name right. I was hoping. Yeah, that's what I keep telling myself. Yeah, Director's Playhouse. Director's Playhouse. Yeah, we'll make sure we get it for this one.
Only our second show with this new name, the new branding. And great to have you back, brother. Great to have you on the show.
Yeah, it's nice to be here. Yeah.
We appreciate you, and we appreciate you out there listening and promoting this show. Thank you so much to everybody out there. With this show, we continue the Civic series, an idea of ours that we had where we give a chance to get to know our Civic Media family a little bit better. And today, we are going to center in and focus on WFHR here. And our listeners, we ask the best listeners in radio to come. Welcome to the WFHR stage. We have our head scheduler, our the head of the office, the decorator, the world's best card giver, the heart of WFHR, Pam Hill. Wilkie with us today. Pam, good to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Appreciate you being here. Nobody that in the last, I would say, 40, 50 years, let alone longer than that, can talk about WFHR and not mention Pam Hilke. Mm-hmm. Like, your impact on this station, this community, is felt and reverberated all over the place in so many different ways. In the job that you're in, you've had a chance to meet just about every local person we've had in this area, let alone local leaders and some of that. So I can't thank you enough for the time to just be able to hang out, talk with you a little bit, and for our audience to get to know you, like Seth and I and so many of us have gotten to know you over the years. If you don't mind, I always like to start with people's origin stories. Where are you from, Pam?
I am from Wisconsin Rapids.
Right on.
Lived here all my life.
Growing up, did you have your family, did you guys have a love for radio?
Well, WFHR was often on the radio at home, at my parents' home. I grew up on the West Side, and I just remember WFHR being on the radio. I remember listening to the polka show when I was a youngster. My mom would have the polka show on like 11 o'clock on weekday mornings and hearing the polka show. I remember in the mornings getting ready for school, WFHR would be on. Of course, back then, that was the total information that we had to listen to find out on a blizzard day, is school canceled? You know, is this a no school day or not? That was where we got the information. There was, of course, no internet, no computers, nothing, no texting that came around, of course. My parents had WFHR on. I remember hearing a lot of the songs, you know, growing up in the, the 60s. Some of those classic songs that you would hear on radio stations. And, you know, every once in a while, I'll hear it now, and I'll say, I remember that when I was a kid.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. It's interesting how I think radio still has just as many responsibilities. They're just different now. But to think of the responsibilities on radio back in the day and how important and vital it was.
Boy, even when we were kids, James, it was the same thing. It was either TV or radio. Mm-hmm. We always did radio because we didn't turn the TV on in the morning. We always had the radio on,
My mom and dad, when it came to school closings or anything, WFHR, as soon as we moved here, because they felt like the radio stations got the information sooner than, you know, TV stations, and they just trusted that more, which was great, because we got an impact, like you and your family, impact of WFHR right away. It also was tough because they knew, and we were always hopeful. So if WFHR said that Lincoln was open or Washington was open or something, we knew we were going to school that day.
There was a time when the local teachers union for the public schools was on strike, and the strike started like January 1st after their contract had ended. And you know, every day we'd have to listen to find out, is there school today? No school today. It's another day off.
Yeah, there you go.
Listening to sports. I remember listening to, you know, Lincoln High School. I graduated from LHS, and, you know, following those teams on air, you know, the basketball or maybe football. And I do remember listening to wrestling during, you know, high school, because that was the years when our teams were so good in that sport. And, you know, listening to Terry Steak, and I remember him saying, you know, he'd be on at 10:30 in the morning. Well, I'll be back at 11:30, and, you know, you make sure you tune in to hear, okay, how did our people do, you know, at the tournament? And it was that outlet there that, you know, that for so much information.
I have a question I want to ask, but I want to set it up first, Pam. Okay. For those that don't know out there, how long have you been in radio?
Well, I started here in June 1977.
Okay, yeah.
So
a good 40-some years.
That's a lot of years. Yeah. I never had any idea that I would be working at my job here.
Well, that's where I wanted to go with it, was you started in this. This has been your career pretty much your whole life.
Right, it turned out to be.
So when you first got, when you first went to school, what were you going to school for? Was it for radio? Was it for something?
No, I went to Mid-State, and I had a two-year degree in accounting. And about a month after I graduated, it was June of 1977, this is it. I graduated. I got to find a job. You know, go forward with life. And there was a little ad in the local Daily Tribune newspaper for immediate opening for a traffic coordinator at the local radio stations, WFHR and WWRW. And it said detail, you know, need attention to detail and accuracy and a little bit of data processing and well, I didn't know anything about a job in a radio station. I didn't know anything about a traffic coordinator, but I, you know, called, got a time to come in for an interview. And I remember I had an interview with Jack DeNiro, the general manager at the time. And it was a Friday afternoon. And I remember I talked with the program directors at the time. And it was Arnie Strope and Scott Chapin. He was the program director for our FM station. And they offered me the job. And I started right up the next Monday right away.
Wow.
So.
Did you, when you were applying for the job, did you think you had a good shot at it?
Not well. You know what? After a couple hours of an interview and they offered me the job right away, I thought, well, that sounds like this job.
You better go for it.
Right,
yeah, exactly.
Right. And little did I know. So.
Little did you know.
I'm curious because I forget this. As long as we've known each other, that you and I both pretty much started in radio the same way. My mother found an article in the Daily Tribune and told me about it. And when I applied for the job, I just thought it'd be cool to apply for the job. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I'd ever get hired. I didn't think I had a resume built for it or anything like that. And, you know, here we are. I find it interesting that you went to school for one thing and found a way to adapt to radio with that career, with that education. It speaks to a lot of us here. There's very few people in the building and really even in the last 10, 20 years who have gotten into radio and found a career and a passion for it,
right,
but didn't necessarily go to school for it right away. It speaks to, I think, to also the one of my favorite things about radio and how so many different walks of life can come into this and find a career and a real future to them. And so many people looking for careers instead of jobs, you find that in radio oftentimes. When you first started here, I imagine you're not thinking, well, here I am the next 40 years, you know.
Right. No.
Those early days, did you enjoy kind of being behind the scenes? You mentioned you listened to WFHR from a young age.
I did, right, because then I got a chance to see a little bit of what was happening and you know, meet some of the people that I'd heard on air. And I remember I didn't know that sometimes people wouldn't use their real names on air.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember growing up in here in Arnie Strope. Well, that was his real name.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another person. His name was Jack Edwards. And then I heard him called by another name. Yeah. And it's like, wasn't this the same person?
Yeah.
Okay, then that's it. Sometimes people don't use their real names on air.
Right.
So maybe that was more common back then. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. That's one of those big shifts that I think happened in radio. And I don't know if there's necessarily like pinpoint you could say this is when it happened.
No.
But I would say a lot of the rise of the shock jock and some of that stuff where a lot of those guys were using their real given names.
Yep.
And you just saw it kind of go from there almost. And where audiences wanted things to go.
Right. Of course, some of us probably should be using different names instead of our hard to pronounce names. But that's where we go.
Pam will remember, and a longtime listener. Listeners of the area will remember, but we for a long time on WGLX had a great personality in Ace. Ace's real name is Paul. But forever, I would call him like Gene or something like that. Or one of the other names in the band of Kiss or something
right,
like that.
Yeah, and perfect. Yeah.
It took forever for me to just call him Paul. Like it was the weirdest thing.
And Paul?
I would know it when I was saying it. Paul was just great about it and everything. Never gave me a hard time, but it was something that would come up from time to time. Pam, we share a lot of what we do behind the scenes with the audience. We let them know a lot of how the sausage is made. I don't think we get a chance to really do this with you and your job.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't mind, could you take us through kind of a day in the life of the work that you do?
Sure. Well, one of my main jobs is to make sure that the commercials that are ordered and scheduled for tomorrow get scheduled on the proper logs. Now, the log is, every radio station has a log of some kind. Here we've got a WFHR and we've got a WIRI log. And it's just a basic, for me, what I'm working in my software system in my computer is making sure that the commercials get placed into the areas in the log where we are allowed to run commercial advertising. And I work on traffic systems that are built up to accommodate the commercial breaks that fall into all the programming that's already set up. And that's part of another, you know, computer system. So we're talking about a lot of computer systems merging together and working right and all that. So, but predominantly, I make sure the logs get properly worked up. All the commercials are inserted where they need to be. And, look, you know, the computers do a lot of the work. But, you know, there's other things that, you know, you have to tackle. If there's, say, a game tomorrow night, I have to make sure I insert a little a game log. It's a separate little log that goes inside the big log. So it's kind of blocks out all the regular commercials, but it puts in the game and it sets it up so that it's got the format that works with the Learfield where we might get, say, the men's hockey game. And all the sponsors and commercials go right in. And I number all of our audio commercials, a lot of our PSAs, promo announcements, they all have a personal identification. That's called a copy number. And I number those. Every piece of audio that's coming on new gets copy number, and make sure that there's an identifier with it. I need to put that into the computer system so that when it goes on the log, it's got its little ID number. And then whoever is in, going to be recording that piece of audio, they use that number and attach the audio to that in the system that holds all the audio so that when it's called for on the log, it plays the right commercial. So now that's just logs.
That's just the logs. Well, and that part of it.
Real quick, I want to say how important that is because, of course, the commercials are the lifeblood of radio. That's how we get our revenue, right? That's how we get up. So because we have a contract with whoever we're doing that commercial for, we have to make be very careful that we play the right number of ads at the right time, that sort of thing. Right. That's why the logs and what Pam does is so important, is because that's, you know, that's the stuff. That's what we need.
And radio can be difficult. It is a it is literally putting the boat together on the water while you're paddling. Live radio is just that way, and we kind of understand and work around that, and we've shared a lot of that with the audience. There is that, and then you're trying to do that in the future. You're trying to do that for tomorrow and next week and everything in an industry that, again, is on the water and constantly changing. Just the adapting and the shifting you have to do on an hourly, let alone daily basis. I want the audience to understand a little bit more. And honestly, it's part of the interview here is for people to understand so much of the work that goes on behind the scenes to make these things happen. We're not here without our advertisers. We're just not. There's nobody doing this job. And people don't get into radio for money anyway, let alone if we're not getting paid. How much it means to them that not only have these things played, but played when, hey, our sales team tells them it's going to play at this time, and it does because of the work Pam does. It's so vital to this. And again, we are merely touching on one of her main jobs, not even 100% the amount of things that she does around here. Because you're also the main scheduler for our Midday magazine.
Help schedule the guests for magazine.
You're our go-to when it comes to literally anything going on. You're such the bellwether of this station and such of the something else that I don't think gets talked about nearly enough. And I touched on this early in the day when I started doing Midday Magazine, but this amazing connection that you and Carl had and ability that you guys had when you were doing Midday. And it's something you do with all of our guests. People come in here and they have their lives going on and craziness and whatever might be happening. They come in and they settle down and you have a calm and a presence to you that sets the tone. So when they join us on the airwaves on the morning show with Seth or I or on Midday Magazine or any of our shows, by the time they get in the studio, they are calm and collected. And that is better for our audience. That is what works here. This is a system that I don't think you could put it right down. Hey, we're going to do this, this, and this. It's just something that you guys created organically. And it's something not only we appreciate and our guests appreciate, but I know our listeners do, whether they realize it or not, because you'd have very different guests coming in and a very different atmosphere.
Yeah, it would be different.
With that.
Yes. It's so nice to meet all these different people that are coming into our studio. And we have a number of people that come quite frequently, and then some people that are maybe once or twice a year, or we find out that there's an event going on or a benefit or whatever. We somehow get contacted, or, you know, we find out about it and we reach out and say, hey, would you be interested in coming on, you know, on air for a short while and be part of our Midday Magazine? And I get things lined up, you know, and they're here.
Yeah. In many ways, Pam is the face of the stations because they're the first, she's the first person people see when they come in the door. Right. And she greets them and, you know, finds out what they need, along with the guests, of course, any guests that we have for, that are going to be on whatever show we're doing, right? So that's part of it, too, is that, and I don't know if you signed up for that,
but it's kind of evolved,
right? It kind of evolved into that throughout the many years you've been here.
When it comes to programming, I can't imagine how long the interview would be if we asked you about all the different changes from when you first started to now.
That would be a book. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Who's writing that book? Yeah.
And honestly, I personally would love to do that. But for time sensitiveness and how we know we all got to get back to things, I'm curious of how what are the biggest changes to you that are from when you started to now in as far as the programming goes and the scheduling?
I think as far as the programming, it's just been just the way our stations have evolved over the years. Mm. Everything isn't always the same. WFHR has certainly changed. Mm. It's back when I first started, there was a whole lot of, well, nearly every hour that we were on air, there was a show host, right, announcer. And I do believe when I first started that we like went off air at 2 a.m. and came back on air at 5 a.m. Mm. So, mm-hmm, you know, there was a time when we weren't on air. Mm-hmm. But every hour was hosted by a show, and you had to have somebody in here running the board. There was no totally automated part of that. The FM side that we had was WWRW, and it was called W103. It was a little bit easier to pronounce.
Yeah, that's not easy to do, right?
Right, and that was just music. I forget which exact format it was. Adult Contemporary, I believe. Mm-hmm. And at that time, the music was on reels. Yes. And there was at least like four reels of different songs and everything on there. Yeah. And the announcers had to make sure that they kept changing those reels. They'd run out after a while. These reels would run out and they'd race back to the system that was playing that and get the music loaded up.
Mm-hmm.
And we had different systems that would play the commercials. It was somewhat automated, but there was different systems that you had to load all the commercials in these carts, and they got played. And in the WFHR side, they had the carts in the studio, and you just had a whole stack of carts. And as you went down the paper log, you had to pull all your carts out by number and get them all ready. And when you're running the board and on air, then take a break and you'd be pulling all these carts and putting them into the cart machine and playing. So
yes.
That's a whole lot different than it is now.
Yeah. We still call them cart numbers, actually.
Right, that's still from that day
when they were actual cartridges, right? Uh-huh, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Pam, I have to ask a couple of tough questions here and there. So I got to ask you a tough one.
Get it over with here.
Yeah, just pull it off. Do you have some favorite moments? Do you have some moments that really stand out to you in your time here at WFHR?
Oh my gosh! I don't know. There's a lot. I don't know if I would say moments, but I think it's just thinking of all the people that I've met, all the people that I've worked with, and all the people that have come through as guests and been on the station, you know, as our on-air guest, or they were a guest of somebody else that was working here, you know, getting a tour of the place or meeting, or. But I think just all the wonderful people that you know. Like I said, that I've met along the way and, got a chance to know, or just famous people, maybe that, you know, somebody, maybe I believe Mr. Cole was here one time, Herb Cole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
Told me about like baseball players when, you know, the Brewers players that you met over the years.
Yes, the Brewers, they used to be on their winter tour and they would stop into the, it was prearranged. They'd be into the office here. Mm-hmm. We've got a photo with Carl and I and Jim Gantner.
So many moments over the years, I can only imagine. And like any of us that answer this question, it always comes down to the people. It's always about
it really does, yeah.
Pam, just a couple of more quick questions and we'll let you get going. It's outside of radio. Do you have other hobbies, other things that you like to do?
You know what? I think that my life is so busy I don't have a whole lot of time for different hobbies, but I like to follow the Wisconsin teams and the sports. I was forever having the Brewers on radio all the time, listening to that. I like to listen to the Packers, the Badgers games. I'll have the games on in the evenings and listening to the games or on the weekend. I like to I guess fiber arts. I enjoyed sewing or crocheting, knitting. Yeah. those kind of little
absolutely
arts and crafts. I'm involved with some organizations in my local church at St. Luke's Lutheran in Wisconsin Rapids.
So very cool.
Like to get out, enjoy the countryside on Sundays, go for a ride out in the country.
Drive in the country on Sundays. Right. Nothing better than that, especially in the summertime.
A few things better than cruising on a Sunday.
That's right.
Pam, you made it to the last question. Here it is, but it is probably the toughest one.
It usually is.
If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who and why?
You know, I've heard you ask that other people, so I thought, oh, I better think about this.
You should. You should have thought about it.
You know what? I think Princess Diana.
Oh,
you
wow.
know, I remember. You know, I remember her when she was getting married, and she was so young and marrying into that. The
craziness,
the majesty,
right?
The royal family, and you know, she was just somebody that, at my age, that you know, we were looking up to her. You know, she was going to be the queen, or so we thought. But yeah, I think just she was just such a neat,
there was something,
neat
she
person.
Was, yeah, there was something about her that was electric, even if you never met her. There was something about her that pulled you in, and I think something comforting about her in many ways. That I've gone back and watched some interviews and some things with her pieces on her and everything, and I tried to think of what it is. Is it, you know, her dying young and some of these things? And no, it's that kind of adds to the, or is a part of her you know, story.
Yeah, the mystique and right.
But like so many people we lose at a young age, I think that wouldn't have mattered. Her legacy would still be
right.
Just be stronger if anything she had been around. The kind of impact she had at the time that she did too was so key to so many. And it just seemed like an amazing person. I remember seeing her early on in her career, and she's, you know, being introduced to some formal meeting or something like that, and all these heads, these big names in England are there, and she sees Rowan Atkins, Mr. Bean.
Yeah, the actor, right?
And at the time, he was more famous for Blackadder.
Right.
And she's doing her job. She's being very professional, all this. She sees him and becomes a fan. Instantly, it just breaks down like, oh my God, it's Rowan. And she was so excited to meet him and everything. And I think that story speaks so much to what we liked about her.
Her humanity.
Yeah.
It was really, it really came through. Yep.
And it's a similar thing with you, Pam. I call you the heart of WFHR because
you
are the heart of this station. So many of the things we've talked about, and we didn't even have a chance to really scratch the surface on you.
That's
not
true.
Only the things you do around here, but the impact you've had, not just on our station, on our community, but on myself and so many of us around here. I am honored and privileged to call you a friend, as along with a coworker and family, really. You are to me a family. So I appreciate the time, Pam.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I just truly love working with everyone, James and Seth and Laura and Melissa and Beth and Ashley and Chuck. And
we got a good team.
That's right.
Yeah. We're really spoiled around
that's
here.
That's why we got to get more of them on here.
Right.
You got to interview more of the team around here.
And as good as she is, she just teed us up for
she
that.
She did. Oh.
Yes.
It was great. Yeah.
We will be having more guests joining us throughout the Civic Series. Thank you so much, Pam, for the time. Appreciate
you. You're welcome.
You.
And there's Tim and Mike and Randy. I think I got everybody. I've got a little list.
Yes.
I hope I didn't forget anyone.
All right. There we go.
Great list. Thank you,
I'd like to thank the Academy.
You're welcome.
We will take a quick time out and we'll come back. We've got a special piece for you coming up to wrap up Director's Playhouse.
You're listening to locally grown radio WFHR.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear, in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
I'm Scarlett Johansson. My family relied on public assistance to help provide meals for us. These meals fueled my involvement in theater and the arts as a child, which fostered my love for acting. The Feeding America Network of Food Banks helps millions of people put food on the table. You can join the movement to end hunger by donating, volunteering, and advocating. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/actnow. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back, everybody, to WFHR's Director's Playhouse. I have your host, James J. Maloff, here. I'm joined by Colin Mockery and Asad McKee from Hitprov, coming to the Grand Theater in Wausau this Saturday, 7:30. So excited about this show, you guys. Want to dive right into the details of it with you and get into some just Q&A with the show itself. First off, before we get into the details of it, how did this come together? This is two worlds that you wouldn't normally see together, but here we are. How did this happen? How did this come to be?
Believe it or not, I reached out to Colin through his website with the idea of merging hypnosis and improv together. Jeff Andrews, Colin's longtime manager, picked up the email. We ended up meeting, we had a conversation, and then we threw it up on the main stage of the Second City after their main stage show. We didn't know if it was going to work. We just decided to give it a shot where I would hypnotize some volunteers and then Colin would improvise with them. And lo and behold, it was a hit, and we ended up now touring the show 150 cities across North America, 6 months off Broadway, 6 months at Harrah's Casino, and it's been a real pleasure to be able to watch the show truly blossom. It's taken on a life of its own. We've had 12 improvisers in performing when Colin's unavailable to perform. We've had Mindy Sterling from the Austin Powers franchise. We've had Jonathan Mangum from Let's Make a Deal. We've had Jeff Hiller from Somebody Somewhere. The list goes on and on. So it's been really exciting to watch the show blossom in that manner.
That's great to hear, Asad. Colin, for you, when this first got brought to you, what were your thoughts? What did you think of this when you first heard it?
I thought it was ridiculous. I thought, how can this work? And then I said, yes, that was the three-step program I used in my career. It came at a time when, I've been doing this for a long time, and one of the fears I had, and still have, is getting content in what I do, and then not challenging myself and making things safe. And I thought, you know what, this cannot be more out of my comfort zone. And working with people I've never met who are in a hypnotic trance, and not knowing, truly not knowing what's going to happen. So that kind of made it exciting. And, you know, when Asad and I walked on stage that first time, we really had no idea if it was going to work, like absolutely none. And that was a very exciting feeling.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And, you know, it's one of the things, and I think you touched on this a little bit before, you guys understand as performers, when you don't have a script, when you're out there without a net, the excitement of that and how it almost feels like, well, you don't know what you're going to say. You know, you're on an inside joke with your fellow creators that the audience isn't in on, that they're going to be. That you're going to let them in on, breaking the fourth wall to another degree in some ways. And then to incorporate this part of it, that just is such a cool and unique idea. I forget the name as I'm trying to come up with it, of course, but I think the amazing Jonathan, I think he combined some of these things at one point a little bit, but there hasn't been anything like this completely before. So can we get into the details of what the show is? What people can expect with the show?
Sure. So I'm the master hypnotist on the show. I bring up 20 volunteers. I hypnotize them, whittle it down to the best subjects. Then Colin Mockery from Whose Line Is It Anyway? Improvises with the people on stage while they're under hypnosis. The show is fast-paced. It's action-packed. And above all else, hilarious, because we got Colin from Whose Line in improvising with some random volunteers from the audience while hypnotized.
That I feel like is a perfect description, and yet only scratches the surface. Because I've watched some of the videos, and I've done my homework on you guys. You really do give a unique show. You really do give. There is no reruns in something like this. Every show is going to be so vastly unique and different, especially when you're traveling all around the country. I can only imagine the different things that come up in different parts of the world and different parts of America here and all that. That's got to make a real fun part of this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what I love is every show is an opening and closing. It's that audience are the only people who's ever going to see this show. And hopefully, I mean, obviously the main point of the show is entertainment, and it's funny and it's fun. But people also realize, a lot of people come into the show with misconceptions as to what hypnosis is. And Asad could probably talk to that better. But, you know, we're not changing these people's personalities. Assad gets rid of that part of their psyche that stops them from doing something, that says you can't do this or you're going to make a fool of yourself. That's gone, and they end up being pure improvisers. And every night, it just, as I watch him put people under from off stage, I go, I don't know how this is working. It's probably best not to even think about it. Just go out there. But it's fascinating.
Do you think that to that point, and I'll ask you both your answers on this. I'll start with you, Assad. Do you think, or rather find people to be more inclined to try improv this way because they're hypnotized, kind of taking their hands off the wheel and letting somebody else take the wheel?
Yeah, so the part of the brain that deals with self-reflection becomes disconnected when somebody's hypnotized. So they no longer reflect on their behavior. They just carry out my suggestions without hesitation and without question, which makes for really good improv. First-time improvisers, as you know, James, they'll hesitate. They'll look nervous. They'll use filler words. None of that happens when people are hypnotized. The good subjects, they will just immediately jump into the scene. They'll be fully committed. And it's like the audience isn't really there. They're just so focused on Colin and I that they give just these incredible performances.
Hmm. Colin, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. We every night we find a superstar, someone who, for whatever reason, just becomes like a great improviser, lots of funny lines. And one night we had this amazing young woman, and afterwards I was talking to her, and she said, "You know, I have crippling social anxiety. I have no idea why I volunteered. That was the best hour of my life. I've never felt so in charge of myself. I never felt so relaxed." So she was planning to go out and take improv classes, find an improv troupe. And I thought, oh, okay, you know, that is not something we thought about, obviously, when we're coming up with the show. But the fact that it sort of opened this woman to the possibility of improvising, I thought that was really cool.
That is so cool. It's one of the things that I think you find, for me, I found, I got into comedy and started doing things at Second City because like you, I watched the show when I was a little kid and grew up on it. But I, as an actor, I was able to really find my tools in drama and you know, action and all these different things, but I was never good at comedy. I think too much. And I don't think I was born with a funny bone. I'm pretty sure I wasn't. Second City really helped me find that. But the biggest thing that I think they opened up to me was so many people taking classes at Second City or other like the Groundlings or other places. I had classes with attorneys. I had classes with people that work in public service that just wanted to feel more comfortable being in the public eye or talking to people. And part of the point of this show and the mission of this show is to certainly promote and support artists supporting artists. But the other part of it is encouraging young artists and showing them the path and showing them ways that they can do this from other people who have already established it. It's part of the reason why I asked those horrible questions for you guys to put up with and all of this is to give people an idea of this can be done and so many people can do it. And I think that this show that you guys are doing just it almost cuts out the middleman. You're just putting people up there right away and showing you, see, you can do this too.
Yeah, I think it opens up the thing about the hypnotism. It just opens up all these possibilities for you.
Yeah.
And to me, if you're watching a show that combines hypnosis and improv, you can pretty much do anything. Anything is possible. At one point, I'm sure someone thought, well, this will never work. And it does. There's always going to be the naysayers. Sometimes the biggest naysayer is yourself. And once you get past that, you know, just go for it. I always tell people, you know, take improv classes, even if you're not going to be an improviser. And by the way, I highly advise you not to. But it's a great life skill. It's great to be able to, you know, walk into situations without any prejudgment and just play it as it lays and see what happens. It really is a great life tool. And I always recommend take an improv class. It certainly can't hurt you.
Is there anything about the show that from any of the touring you guys have done and the success you've had with this already that really stands out to you? I mentioned a little bit of some of the publications and pieces that have been written about this. The out of the London Times, a celebration of the human imagination. That's such a great line. And it's I think it fits the show so well. Are there moments like that or are there times in live shows that you guys remember that you're like, okay, this was fantastic?
I will speak about the New York Times reviewing us at the Asylum. We were, that's the Improv Asylum in New York City. We were about to perform off Broadway, and one of the New York Times critics, Jason Zineman, came in to watch the show. And I will tell you, I was so nervous before that show. And I was nervous after the interview, after the show, because I thought, you know, this is kind of make or break because it's the New York Times. And we ended up getting the front cover of the New York Times art section. And in it, you know, some of the quotes were, "It killed." And then the crowd erupted in laughter. So that really, for me, was a pinnacle for the show and for my career. And to be able to do that in New York, it just speaks volumes about the show. And, you know, I'm just so very happy to be a part of it all.
Hmm. Colin, similar for you?
I've been drunk for most of the tour, so I don't really remember. For me, it's just exciting to do something new. I'm doing what I love. I'm out there improvising, and it has that added layer of, it's a different improv. I'm not working with people I know, so it's sort of making me hone in to what my improv skills are, listening and working with someone and knowing, okay, now I'm just going to sit back and see where they go. And now, it's time for me to come in and sort of lead a little. So I think it's really sharpened me improv-wise and kept me fresh, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, those are great notes, too. And I think it's always great when you see somebody who is so good at what they do and they continue to push themselves and want to be even better. And we can all learn from that no matter what jobs we do or what we do with our lives. Asad, I could not thank you enough for the time. I really enjoyed going down a rabbit hole of you and your career and getting to know a little bit more of you and that. Now I'm going to be a fan and follow your career the rest of wherever you go and whatever you do. Thank you so much for the time, man.
Oh, thanks so much, James.
Colin, I mentioned Robin Williams earlier. I think like a lot of people, Robin Williams is the greatest improv artist I've ever seen. Depending on which Whose Line episode I'm watching, it's either you or Ryan Stiles that is in the number two spot in there. It's two or three. You guys switch bases all the time in my head. I cannot tell you how great it is to talk with you and to share this conversation and this time with you. Thank you so much for it.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice of you. Although you lost some points when you mentioned style.
I should have done that. I knew I messed up there. I knew it, but we'll fix that in post. We'll fix that. Guys, before I let you go, we have a question that we wrap up every show with. It's a bit of a tip of the hat to the Inside the Actors Studio and James Lipton in that. If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who and why? And I'll start with you, Asad.
Nelson Mandela.
Ooh.
Just read his book years ago. I can't. It's and it was just, it was so incredible. The human spirit, unbreakable, and the forgiveness, you know, he was just brutalized by the regime at the time. And he was, just incredibly, forgiving after his incarceration. And I thought to myself, you know, why hold a grudge on anybody when Nelson Mandela was thrown into prison and was left there to rot? And he comes out and he figures out a way to work with these people that did that to him. I thought to myself, you know what, it'd be interesting to hear his insights and just sit there and talk to him.
Very well said. Great answer. Yeah. Colin, how about you?
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah, he took your answer, didn't he? He took your answer.
Yeah. Oh. I'm going to go with Bob Hope. As someone who went through every version of show business. He started in vaudeville, he did some silent movies, he did the talkies, he could sing, there's a great scene on YouTube with him and Jimmy Cagney in a scene from Seven Little Boys where they do this incredible tap dance. And I think, yeah, that was the time where you had to do everything. And just to get sort of... I do feel he kind of stayed in a little too long, and that's one of my worries. Mm. So I would have said, I think I'd like to have the coffee and say,
when do you think you should have stopped doing this? Because I'm going to take your advice on that.
Mm-hmm. I really study MCs a lot. I think Bob Hope may have been the greatest MC we'll ever see. He was such a natural at it. And that's a great answer. It's fantastic. This has been a great conversation. Thank you both so very much. We're going to make sure you guys have a full house and a big crowd at the Grand Theater this Saturday, 7:30 for Hip-Prov. You can get your tickets at GrandTheater.com, GrandTheater.com. And we'll be selling this show, talking about it on our morning shows and other shows as well. Guys, enjoy yourselves. Break a leg out there. Safe travels getting here. We'll see you soon. Thanks for the time.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks, James.
Thank you. Just a gigantic thank you to Asad Mekki and Colin Mockery for joining us today talking about Hip-Prov. Fun time. We just want to take this time to remind the audience that not only does Director's Cut turned into Director's Playhouse with a bit of the revamp there, but this show has become more and more popular thanks to all of you out there. And this show is made up of you. So if you're an artist, if you're a creative, any type, we want to hear from you. Reach out to me, james.maloff@civicmedia.us. You can, of course, direct message us on our Facebook pages. Call up at our front desk at 715-424-1300. Any type of creative out there, musician, comedian, whoever you might be, we want to have you on the show. Again, thank you to the boys for joining us. Be sure to get your tickets at GrandTheater.com. That is GrandTheater.com. Get those tickets for Hip-Prov coming this Saturday, the 25th at 7:30 to the Grand Theater right in Wausau, Wisconsin. We'll be back with another Director's Cut for you very soon right here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
CBS News Brief. At a gathering of international leaders in London, outgoing German Chancellor Olaf Scholz supported European nations banding together with Ukraine against the Russian invasion.
We all are understanding that it is our common task to support Ukraine because it's a threat to the security architecture, not just of Europe, but also the world.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is criticizing Hamas for not accepting an extension of the Gaza ceasefire.
Israel has accepted this plan. I accepted this plan. But so far, Hamas has rejected it.
Netanyahu has stopped aid from moving into Gaza. With President Trump's address to Congress looming this week, CBS Face the Nation host Margaret Brennan checks the new CBS News poll on his job performance.
President Trump's approval rating in our poll is 51%, still in positive territory, but by a smaller margin than he had a month ago.
CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Toscano.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Central Wisconsin weather, I'm Corey Hartman. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows around 16. Chance of rain on Monday, mostly cloudy. 47 are high. Chance of rain Monday night with a low near 34. Rain is likely on Tuesday. Highs in the mid-40s. Rain and snow mix on Tuesday night.
Currently 33 degrees.
The excitement.
Oh, he stones Brodzinski with a glove save.
The energy.
What's he going to do? He shoots and he scores.
The tradition.
You've got to understand history if you're ever going to write your own.
It's everything.
He scores. Badgers answer right back.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger hockey.
Sponsored by Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep, Econ Electric, and 8th Street Auto. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, streaming live and on the Civic Media app.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information, and WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
Imagine you're driving down the street and bam! You lose a tire in a pothole. Great! Come on, we're all thinking it. Suddenly you start hearing air escape. That tire is shot. Before you lose your patience, call the team at 8th Street Auto. Not only can they get that tire fixed and on the road, but they can also help you with finance options to upgrade. Trade in that low-to-the-ground car for a truck and never get stopped by a pothole again. 8th Street Auto, where every client is treated like family. To get you back on the road, you have stuff to do.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government
Buy-in for the people. If you're headed to vote in New Hampshire's traditional March town meetings and need to register, bring proof of citizenship documents with you or you won't be able to vote. 20 other states have similar legislation pending. New Hampshire's HB 1569 eliminated sworn citizenship affidavits, subject to fines or imprisonment for lying, as evidence of citizenship. It now accepts only a birth certificate, U.S. passport, or naturalization papers. There is no evidence of any widespread non-citizen voting in the state, and the law was immediately challenged in federal district court as unconstitutional and an unreasonable burden. President Donald Trump's recent unfounded claims of widespread non-citizen voting generated a rush to tighten proof of citizenship legislation around the country. Voting Rights Lab is tracking 35 proof of citizenship bills in 20 states, many based on model legislation pushed by former Trump election lawyer Cleta Mitchell and her Only Citizens Vote coalition. Just this month, proof of citizenship bills were advanced in Wyoming and Missouri. 18 other states are considering bills adding proof of citizenship requirements, and the pending SAVE Act in Congress would require it for federal elections. A 2024 study by the Brennan Center for Justice found 9% of Americans don't have ready access to their citizenship documents. We have links to the Voting Rights Lab tracker and more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to WFHR's Director's Playhouse, everybody. Seth and James here with you, and we have brought into the studio Kathy Miles, talking a little bit with Kathy and her journey, her life story, and all of that above. And, of course, we're talking Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater, as we're not only celebrating 50 years of Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater this year, but also just celebrating the arts and celebrating a theater all of us love in different ways and for so many reasons. And Kathy, one of the things that I've done my homework on you over the years. I know your backstory and I know quite a bit about you. But one of the things that I actually came across was an old story. I'm a gigantic fan of Steppenwolf Theater in Chicago. It's one of my dream jobs is to do a play on there. I don't care if I'm just an extra in the background. And I'm very proud of that theater, being a Midwest kid, being a Chicagoan and everything. And I love the history and the origin stories of things, as you have found out. One of the stories I just came across, and I'd never seen the details of, I just heard rumors of, but when they were first starting and the very first plays that they did, they, of course, would bring people in and stuff, and they're hoping to... But they had the bathroom areas, but they didn't have the money for toilet paper. So John Malkovich and Gary Sinise would, during intermissions, would run to like gas stations and places and like ask to use their bathroom and steal their toilet paper to bring to have into there. And of course, all these decades later and everything, Steppenwolf, I think is the Broadway of the Midwest. I think that Steppenwolf Theater has built such a reputation and the talent and the people they bring into it. It just is pretty cool to see where it started from Malkovich and Sinise running around stealing toilet paper to where now it's one of the premier places to play if you want to be a performer here in the Midwest. I'm curious of those early days of WRCT and maybe not stealing toilet paper. Hopefully you didn't have to do that. But some of those early days of getting this established, of getting this built.
Yes, well, we didn't have to steal Thank toilet goodness. Paper. Thank what can I tell you about it? It was a matter of constantly reaching out and trying to bring in people who had talents, connecting with people. Mm-hmm. That was really important. People would pop up and say, "Oh, hey, I've got some lights here at this alternative school where I teach. You need some lights?" Yes, we do. So it is a matter of bringing in resources. You do that. By the way, I interviewed Gary Sinise once.
Oh, really?
But much later. For Forrest Gump.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
In Vienna. He brought it to a festival in Vienna. But anyway, that's a whole other story.
We'll talk about it. We'll get that story for me one day. Well, part two. Well, our second interview. It's really, I just think it's so interesting to see where these things start. You mentioned, the theater, for those that don't know and maybe not been in town, the theater used to be a part of Macmillan Library, and that was where our shows used to take place and everything. To see it go from that to having your own walls, your own building, your own backstage, or all that. I wanted to ask you, as we're kind of wrapping up talking about Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater here a little bit, you know, what it must mean to sit back and see where it is now. But even just rewind a little bit before that, when the theater went from the library, which we loved, and a big shout out to Macmillan Library and all the, you know, I did some shows there at that stage, and I loved my time there. But the idea of going from that to having your own theater, your own stage, what that must have felt like for you.
Yes, I was very lucky to happen to be in town during those years. And also, I was so fortunate when Ellen Raisler asked me if I would like to direct the last show at Macmillan Library, which was Gypsy, as you know. And then to do the first show in the new theater. You know, how lovely that was and how thoughtful that was. But that was also a matter of really reaching out to the community. We were so lucky to have a gift from Gilbert and Jay Lee Mead. And then we were so lucky to have somebody like Larry Nash come on and head up our fundraising team and use all of his resources and connections to twist elbows. I suppose you already know this, but we topped our goal by something like 1 or 2%. And that's like, who does that? Most people are like, oh my God, we just need that last 1 or 2% or more. Yep. And we topped it. But it was about having built up over those many years goodwill and the connections in the community, and people realizing that, yeah, we want this to exist. But it's wonderful to have a space of your own and also to see how that space has grown from what it was. And we were lucky to have a connection with the city, to have their support. Jerry Bach originally was so, so supportive of us when he was mayor. And really, you know, work to make things happen for us. But that's how things happen when you have a lot of support, when it doesn't depend on one person or a couple of people. You do have to have, when you're starting up something, you do have to have probably your figurehead person who is going to devote every ounce of their strength and source and everything they have and is so committed to making this thing succeed. But you also have to realize if you have an idea that can succeed. I think that's kind of crucial. Years later, I put together some festivals here in town. But I wouldn't have done that if I didn't think that I had enough of a base and had enough resources that I was going to actually be able to do them. So you can test the waters a little bit. If you see something, if there are too many obstacles, you know, leave that, move on to something else. If you have a creative mind, man, you can always find something else that you want to do.
Very true. Absolutely. I want to speak real quick to the ability of a community theater to have their own space. I've moved around a lot. Some people have heard this story before, but I've moved since I've been married to a pastor. We move around quite a bit to different churches, and I have seen community theaters most of the time. With most, it's beg, plead, and, you know, try to find a place to perform. It can be extremely difficult. I thought it was so cool when we moved into town here and saw the community theater, you know, right across the street, you know, from where we lived. It was, you know, we check it out and we were like, wow, this is amazing. Look at this facility that they have here. This is so cool that they have something that's solid. It's theirs. They don't have to worry about, well, where are we going to store the costumes? Where are we going to store, you know, our flats? Where all this stuff that goes at you. You don't even think about it when you're at, you know, you go to a show, you know, where does all this stuff go when the show is done? To have that there, to have the studio theater there, to do other kinds of projects. I mean, it's a blessing for a community theater like this to have that kind of facility.
Yeah, I have to say it's pretty impressive. I am part of a professional theater group in Prague, and they have a theater of their own. They rent it. They don't own it. But It's not nearly as nice as our theater.
It's really
and that's
nice.
A professional company with a big budget.
Right.
I think it's quite unusual.
It is.
To have something like this as a community theater, and it's a resource for the community too.
That story in sharing so much of that with us, and thank you for that, Kathy, because it's a testament to what people can do from a grassroots level when they really want to accomplish something. And that can bleed into everything, not even just the arts. But I have a lot of nonprofits on the air with us, I think, that have very similar stories to how they started. And festivals that we have in this area that started that way. That reminded me of that very much when you were talking about that. It also speaks to something else that comes up with our nonprofits and a lot with how great this community is and how much it supports these things and how and just blown away I am every day, literally.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Governor Tony Evers has released his budget, calling this the most pro-kid budget in state history. This is now the fourth time that Evers has put forth a budget proposal, and the three prior were all met with a similar fate. Republicans in the legislature rejected it entirely. Again this year, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss called the budget dead on arrival. To a certain extent, this is what we've come to expect from this era of divided government in Wisconsin. In previous years, Evers has eventually signed Republican-authored budgets and used his line-item veto powers to make certain changes. But could he play hardball this time around and threaten to veto the entire budget? Is there anything in this pro-kid budget that has to be there? Things like education funding, or clean water protections, or Medicaid expansion? With everything going on in Washington, now might be the right time for Evers to fight for these proposals and fight for Wisconsinites in any way he can.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariana. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Toscano. Supporting Ukraine was the focus of a gathering of European and other leaders in London today, as CBS's Christian Benavides reports.
British Prime Minister Keir Starmer pledged about $2 billion to supply 5,000 air defense missiles for Kyiv, now in the fourth year of its war with Russia.
The UK is prepared to back this with boots on the ground and planes in the air. Together with others, Europe must do the heavy lifting.
Stormer said he, along with Zelensky and French President Emmanuel Macron, agreed to work on a peace plan to present to the U.S., which has discussed brokering a deal.
To succeed, this effort must have strong U.S. backing.
In North Carolina, crews are using controlled burns to slow the spread of fires there. In South Carolina, Doug Wood of the Forestry Commission describes fighting the